This is a Steam Studio production.
Welcome to the Steam Spotlight, where we celebrate the inspiring achievements of students, educators, and community partners making waves in the STEAM field.
For this spotlight, the STEAM Studio is excited to sit down with April Starzl, STEAM Program Coordinator and Educator, to explore the behind-the-scenes work of creating dynamic, functional, and safe maker spaces. April shares her insight on designing classrooms that foster creativity, collaboration, and hands-on learning, from equipment selection and layout to safety protocols and supply management. Whether you're an educator planning a new makerspace or looking to optimize an existing one, April's expertise offers valuable lessons on balancing innovation with practicality.
So we are excited today in the studio to have April Starzl join us, one of our very own STEAM team members. Welcome, April.
Thank you for having me.
So April, we're going to first learn a little bit about you, but then I want to talk about this big, massive project you have been working on for the last year. So firstly, April, let us know a little bit about who you are and what do you do for NIU STEAM.
Who I am. I am a practicing professional artist, a mother, and a program coordinator and classroom manager here at NIU STEAM.
And so that is kind of exciting because it's a position we've built, right? Like that we didn't have one before. So what do you do? What does that mean here at NIU STEAM?
What does that mean? That means I help build the foundation from which we grow off of. I organize our spaces. I make sure that we have supplies and inventory and everything can be found easily for our entire team. I make sure that our classroom spaces are functional for our students that come in, make sure that they have what they need, and our environments are safe.
Which is amazing. And I think that's why I wanted to talk with you today, because it's one of those aspects of building a makerspace or a STEAM classroom that I think a lot of people don't think about. I know there are probably a lot of teachers or educators out there who are like, yay, we got the grant. We're building a makerspace. And they think about the stuff or they think about what might happen in the classroom. But there's a lot more to it.
So much. There are all the golden apples that you're thinking about when you receive those kinds of funds. And there's a lot of other things that need to go in place to make sure those golden apples stay ripe and usable. I know here recently we received a very generous grant from Meta that allowed us to redo our classroom spaces. And starting with step one was looking at the spaces we had available and seeing how we could fit the things that we desired within our spaces.
And it's been an interesting mix of what are we already doing that the spaces, equipment, even the furniture, and like all the way down to the markers, like what are we doing that it can support, but also what can it help us do in the future that we're not doing that we need to be doing? So walk us through a little bit, because this wasn't just kind of like we sit down and just go shopping. There's a lot of prep and planning and project management that goes into building spaces like this. So what did that process look like for you?
Absolutely. So the process starting from square one was looking at the spaces and literally looking at them, getting down on hands and knees and measuring from corner to corner and building up the rooms, sketching them out, putting them into CAD program, and then thinking about how we could lay out the rooms so that they have good function and flow, as well as considering the safety of the equipment and making sure that we had proper ventilation, proper electrical receptacles for the various machines, because you can get really excited and put a whole bunch of stuff in there, but if you don't have power to run it or proper exhaust, then it can be useless until those problems are resolved. So those are definitely things you want to think about in the beginning. The other thing you want to think about is the audience or who will be using the spaces. And our spaces here were largely educational. We work with a younger student body. So we try to use machines that are very user-friendly, that are easy to jump on board with, that are pretty safe to use. So organizing from there.
But in addition to the students we have in the space, how did you connect with our instructors? Because you see that back in the early days of EdTech, when schools would get grants, they'd bring the technology in. The one person who knew how to run it would run it and then leave, and the tech would sit. So what are some different ways that you engaged with our educators who are going to be using the space and making sure their needs were met too, but also supporting their growth?
Absolutely. So with these machines, all of them, they have all their own programming, all their own ins and outs and things that you have to learn about them. So what I do personally is I set up these training sessions and I extend them out to our entire team. And I will have them come and learn the basics of the machinery so that they can then grow off of those basics, build their own lesson plans surrounding whichever piece of equipment they're most interested in. And prior to being in this makerspace, I worked in our NIU art digital fabrication lab and ran that studio over there. So I gained a lot of experience working with undergrads and graduates and how to implement lessons into every branch of every practice of art in the art building. And that's honestly what led me into STEAM, because then I started making pieces of art that incorporated plexiglass and light and sensors. And then I found myself needing to speak to an engineer. And it just kept branching out from there. And I get really excited about all the makerspace equipment and all the programs, because in CAD programming, it's literally world building. I tell everybody, like, you can build anything. Anything, like a door hinge, a screw, a skyscraper, a cruise liner, and then you can start prototyping those things with the equipment that you find in a makerspace. And it's just so exciting. And figuring out how to transform one material into another material, all the processes that are involved, it's just endless learning and world building.
It is so much fun. And it's fun to watch how the students respond to that and how their creativity and even their risk-taking, like this idea that, all right, I'm going to try to 3D print something, I'm going to try to build something, but it might not work.
Absolutely.
So I can do it again.
Yes. And there's a lot of that, a lot. Man, just for instance, like on a laser cutter, you know, you're working with really expensive materials sometimes. Plexiglass is not an inexpensive material, so you always want to test cut things in paper first or cardboard, things that won't cost you hardly anything, if at all, if you're trying to reuse materials. And then you move into the more expensive materials. Same thing with 3D printers. You can start with the lower grade materials and then work your way up all the way to the higher class materials, depending on what your printer can handle. And then, I mean, there's so with it. There's something you can do. Even if your own printers can't handle the materials that you hope to have your projects printed in, there are companies out there you can send your files out to, and they will make it happen in gold if you want.
Which is a great opportunity to test it in low-cost materials and go, yep, my models sound.
So now let's get it made in gold.
When
please.
I invest in this. So I think what's interesting and what I think a lot of people don't understand, and when I first kind of brought you onto the team, one of the first things I charged you with was not just the equipment and the space, but the stuff, the supplies.
All the stuff.
All the supplies. And I think that's one thing that people start to understand early if they're setting up a makerspace or a STEAM lab is you need – it's about hands-on building, so you need the things to hands-on build with, but that stuff can get out of control really quickly.
It absolutely can.
So what are some of the systems you've put in place? Because we went from really not having any to we've got some pretty tight systems here.
We do. So our team is extremely visual. So one of the big changes I made was making sure every supply material is in a clear bin so that we can see it and quickly come through and spot it if we're not sure where it is. We've implemented a checkout system to help track what's coming in and what's going out. You know, you can't be creative without some tools and some things. And, you know, when you get into that moment and you get that spark of drive and creativity, and you're like, oh, I got it. I really want to make this thing. Now, where's all the stuff?
But I can't find a rubber band.
Right. And if you can't find the stuff, that kind of like kills that drive of wanting to create, or you're like, oh, maybe I'll do it later, or, you know, and then it doesn't really get done. And just being able to go into a space and stay on that drive, that high drive of, I have this idea, I want to make it happen, and I know where everything is to make it happen, is just crucial.
We've actually implemented a little bit of kind of some just-in-time sourcing. We've got our deep storage, but then we've got the materials in the classroom, because that's one of the ways makerspaces get really expensive. It's easy to overbuy supplies. 10,000 popsicle sticks later, you're like, we don't need 10,000 popsicle sticks. But that's another piece that I think...
They never go away.
They never do. Like, as much as we use them, they multiply. But I think it goes back to, what are some of the systems, or what advice would you give to a teacher who might be setting up a space in how to just organize the stuff and make sure you've allotted the space for that?
Yes. So definitely want to be thinking about high use items and consumables, and maybe kind of put those organized together. And then if you need to purchase a high ticket item like a tool, try to make sure it's something that can be reused over and over again, or something that maybe requires little maintenance to upkeep. That's another big thing with makerspaces that people completely forget about. They get the machines, they get in there, and then you start running your prints or you're running your cuts, and then it starts to look really nasty inside that laser bed. Or maybe the filament is not coming out of the nozzle quite right, and then you're like, well, what's happening? I didn't think about how I'm going to have to clean this thing, or what am I going to do when it doesn't work? It's a learning process, and it's also something you have to stay on top of if you want the machinery to keep working. So do your research when you're picking out a printer, when you're picking out a laser bed or CNC machine, anything like that. Go and do a deep dive on what's out there, what's available, and what has lasted a long time. What's easy to repair if you need to repair it. And just also keep in mind that it will require time and personnel. So you are investing yourself into the equipment as much as you are your dollar into the piece of machinery. And that's also where it can get expensive. So just watch out for those hidden costs almost, upkeep, maintenance. Try and leave contingency in your, especially if you get a grant or any kind of guest fund, sponsor funds for building a maker space, try to leave 10%, 15%, or if you want to be, you know, really on top of a 20% for like a crazy thing, like you don't have electrical running to the room to support your machinery.
Or the ventilation. I think ventilation is another one that people don't always think about.
Yes. 3D printers, they put out noxious fumes depending on what you're printing in, and microplastics. So you would think, like, it's fine, everybody's doing it, and everybody is doing it to an extent, but not everyone is thinking about those repercussions. And especially if you're working in a space where you're going to have a lot of people coming through, maybe sitting down at a workbench and working in the space while the printer's going in the background, you want to make sure you have proper ventilation running through the room, or the ventilation's built into the machine, which a lot of them are nowadays.
Yeah, you're seeing more advanced, school-friendly kind of prosumer level equipment.
It's true. And even with like a laser bed, people will get excited like, oh, I have this bright neon pink clipboard and I'm going to go and I'm going to etch in it. Not a good idea, because you actually don't know what that material is. And with the laser too, every time you fire it, you're transforming whatever material is in there into something else. And a lot of those something else's are noxious fumes. So just have to be careful. Yeah. It's always good to stick to organic materials.
Yeah, and just pay attention to the off-gassing.
That's right. And yeah, there's a lot of safety that goes into it. You always have to be in the room when the laser's running, in case of a fire, you know, you guys set up eyewash stations, make sure you know where your extinguisher is, all those things.
Well, and you've had to think quite a bit about what are the safety protocols as you're building these rooms. And so we've got everything from material data sheets to cabinets where fire
flammable
materials need to go. What were some of the big pieces that we put in place to just make sure the space is safe for our learners and our visitors and our instructors?
Absolutely. So definitely proper storage of any kind of chemicals and proper cabinetry, especially if you're working with like a resin printer, which everything involving resin printers is slightly a safety hazard. So, you know, how all the way up to how do you dispose of the bad resin? You want to look into where you're situated. We're in a university, so we have hazardous waste people that will help us come pick up our chemicals and things and make sure they're properly disposed of. Nothing you want to be pouring down the sink. Making sure there's eyewash stations and there's emergency response guide in the room, the SDS sheets.
First aid kits.
We even went and got an AED outside the room.
Ice packs. So many ice packs.
We have everything in case of an emergency. It's wonderful, you know. Oh, and even a basic first aid kit. Because I feel like the most common injuries, honestly, is just you cut yourself on a piece of material.
I poked myself with a pair of scissors.
Or you're popping something off of the scaffolding on your 3D printed piece, and then one of the things flies at your eye. Like, it's important to have an eye wash station.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, that's not something we really need in here, is it?
And that's one of those things where it's overcautious
is always better.
Good, just in case.
Just in case.
The what ifs.
It is.
So I think one of the fun pieces of all of this was not just the kind of the big equipment, like looking at the 3D printers and the laser cutter and everything, but just some of the fun things that allow for flexible learning in our spaces. So what's kind of your favorite piece or favorite new tool that we've gotten in that and we're seeing how the students are using it?
I mean, I love the laser bed, if I'm going to be completely honest. When I started learning CAD programs and just world building in a digital space, it kind of stemmed out of me wanting to make these gigantic sculptures in my own personal practicing artist profession. And my body was like, no, I don't want to make those giant sculptures. That's too heavy. So then the digital space kind of became the space where I could create these things without needing to harm my body in any way. And being able to connect with other people and fabricating those pieces with other people and building up a community to make something enormous and beautiful was just like magical to me. And I started with planar building, which is you make a thing with planes, individual planes, and then you build it into a 3D structure. It's from 2D to 3D, and that's like the first step into the whole 3D world building. So I just find myself getting people excited about, you know what this laser bed can do? It can do everything.
I know it really can.
It's a flat thing, but anything you cut on there, you can take it out and you can make it into a not flat thing. And the possibilities are endless. And I feel like what you can do on a laser bed, you can expand upon it like puzzle pieces almost.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's gigantic, it won't fit in your laser bed. You can kind of cut up whatever pattern or 2D image that you're hoping to slice out of there. And slice it into pieces, and then you can cut that on paper and then plaster it onto a 4x8 and cut that out with a jigsaw if you wanted to. So just really blowing things up real big if you want, or making them really tiny. And then with the 3D printers, sculpturally, I feel like you can get really fine detail, depending on the printer, with some of your projects that you're working on there. And it allows you to prototype for precision. So all these machines do, really. And speaking of CAD, I know I keep talking about CAD programs and everything. That is another time investment you want to think about, is learning the software that goes into each piece of equipment, because it's all different. And once you kind of start understanding the language of one or two of these programs, it's pretty much the same language, and figuring out what kind of file types work across all the language is good.
Well, it's funny, as you mentioned language, because sitting here listening to you talk about 3D modeling and fabrication, as an artist, through an artist's perspective, it's very similar to probably the same things I would hear as if I was talking to an engineer or to a designer. And I think that really shows why we talk STEAM and why we bring arts into this and why
Absolutely.
It's so important.
I love taking our students during the summer to all the sculptures we have around campus, and I'll get them in front of these big sculptures you can walk around. And what I like to ask them is, what do you think it took for this to get here? And then we start to brainstorm. It wasn't just one person. It wasn't one person that made this happen. Maybe it was one person that had the spark of the idea. But to make this thing get right here for you to enjoy, to walk around, feel the presence of, that was a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody, it kind of shows how everybody's different expertise and abilities come into making something.
Yes.
Whether it's a sculpture, whether it's a car, whether it's a computer,
yes.
Whether it's a building.
Yes.
Architecture.
Yeah. I love it.
That's a whole nother podcast.
Yes, it is.
I think what's been fun to watch our students in this space, I think and I'm not going to speak for our students, but I think one of their favorite pieces are the dry erase desks. Seeing our team use them, seeing the students use them, that has been such a simple yet amazing addition to the space.
Yes. So going back to supplies and costs, one of the big things that we did with some of our funds was we transformed some of our tables into whiteboard tables. And we also purchased some tables with whiteboard built into them. But it's easy to transform a regular table, even if it looks beat up and ugly. You just kind of clean up that surface pretty well, scuff down anything that might be risen off the top of it, and cover it up with some whiteboard and get some markers for those kids, and they'll go nuts. They just start sketching out all their ideas. They don't need to find a pencil that maybe has a half-bitten eraser on it. They don't need to find paper. It's right there, ready to go for them.
I found, too, watching the students, the students that need to doodle to think, or that need to, even our own team members.
Oh, yes.
The ones that need to be listening and taking notes. But you know, it's a great thinking tool. And it's one of those that I don't think a lot of people think about the importance of the furniture in this space.
Yes.
The movable tables, the adjustable tables, the chairs that rock.
Oh, like my goodness.
All the different
yes.
ways that the furniture can accommodate
Absolutely.
The learning goals of the space.
Yeah, we weren't made to sit at a desk all day.
Nope.
We weren't. And kids, they're learning that behavior of sitting at a desk all day. And it is hard. It's hard for even adults to do. And having some rocking, kneeling, kind of soft furniture room, flexibility to those students. Like I'll even stand in the corner of the room sometimes while I'm doing something, and I see a kid start to rock on their chair, or move around or wiggle, and I'll come tap them on the shoulder. I'm like, hey, you're moving around in this chair too much, switch to the rocking chair. And they have no problem doing it. This is exactly what they needed to help them focus. Yeah. Sometimes you just have to move. And also having those whiteboard tables there, I feel like information, if it runs through your body and then comes back out of you in some kind of form or fashion, be it you're teaching it to somebody or you're writing it down or you're speaking it out loud, you're absorbing that information just so much better.
A much more active listening if
yes.
you're trying to take it in, process it.
And then put it back out.
And put it back out. And I think that it promotes that. And some of our students put it back out in writing. Some do it in drawing. It's just been fun to watch how the whiteboard desks get used. So, advice for an educator who has just been they've identified a space, they've got the funds. What advice would you give as a good place to start and things not to forget if somebody is building a makerspace?
Consider your audience is the number one thing. Is it just going to be you moving through that space? Is it just going to be you maintaining the space? Do you have other people that are helping to maintain the space? Will you be training other people on the equipment? Are students going to be coming in and using this space? That will determine and dictate so much in the room. Do you want work tables in the space? How tall are they going to be? Like, who's going to be standing at those desks? You also want to consider, you know, no matter the size or the amount of your funds, you can get something in there. You can get a Cricut if you can't afford a laser. Or, you know, there's lasers out there that are much smaller and they've come more and more affordable. Mm-hmm. Just make sure it's a good, reputable little printer, you know, or a little laser. I call it a printer because when you send a file to the laser, it's called printing. It basically is a printer. You know, you can afford one of those. Or, you know, do you want to start with like a solid, sound 3D printer? One you know is a good workhorse, and you can build off from there. Or if you have the sky's the limit amount of money, then you can really do a deep dive into the best equipment, what's going to last. Maybe you branch out and reach out to other departments and see what they're using. Like our engineering department here has a laser bed. Our art department has a laser bed. What kind are you using? Or what kind of 3D printers do you have in your space? Maybe, you know, if someone else in a different department on your campus has already got some of these tools, you want to get something else that will help kind of uplift everybody into having better equipment all around the board. And then electrical. Can your room handle what you need it to handle? And ventilation, absolutely ventilation. Always be thinking about that. Even if a machine you get has a ventilation fume system built into it, there's still going to be off-gassing into the room. You have to make sure that that off-gassing can get out of the room. You know, maybe nobody's going to be in the room. Maybe it's just a room where the printers run and you're not there. That's cool. Still make sure that air can get out.
That.
Yeah, that's fine. And then safety. Just make sure in case of emergency, the things are in place already to help you address an emergency situation should they occur. And taking the time to learn the software, taking the time to get to know the equipment so that you can keep it alive, running, and functioning well. And I promise you, the more time you invest in that, the more excited you'll get about what the possibilities of what you can do with the machine, how you can implement it into lesson plans, or how you can teach others how to use this in an approachable way.
So I'm hearing, identify your needs and your goals with the space. Do your research. Enlist the help of others who have done this,
yes,
have done the research.
Absolutely.
Or who have expertise in areas that you don't, such as the safety or the building maintenance.
Oh, yeah.
And plan. Just set time to make a good
plan. Put a contingency
plan
in there, too. You want to set aside some contingency. That's, people always forget about that. So it's very important.
Well, April, thanks so much for taking some time to chat with us.
Absolutely.
And talking about this amazing project of building this space that we have. And we appreciate your time and your energy this morning.
I really appreciate being here. Thank you.
This has been a production of the Steam Studio. Please make sure you like, subscribe, and leave a review to help others discover our shows. You can listen on platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to this STEAM Spotlight. Thank you to our partners, NIU STEAM and Northern Illinois University, for supporting this podcast. If you would like to learn more about the work we do, please check us out online at niusteam.niu.edu. Thank you so much for listening.